It's going to jump us to Luke 14, towards the end. This is verses 25 through 35. Now large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and he turned and said to them, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself, cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not first sit down and estimate the cost to see whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it will begin to ridicule him, saying, 'This fellow began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king, going out to wage war against another king, will not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to oppose the one who comes against him with 20,000. If he cannot then, while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for the terms of peace. So therefore, none of you can become my disciple if you do not give up all of your possessions. Salt is good, but if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is neither fit for the soil nor from the manure pile. They throw it away. Let anyone with ears to hear listen." Friends, this is the word of the Lord. So, this is the Preservation of the Truth week. If you look on the front of your bulletin, you'll see which banner matches that up. And it's this one over here. They did it in very different colors from us. They've got the symbolism on the front of your bulletin. You can read about that. But preservation and truth are two really weird things, okay? So I immediately, when thinking about preservation, thought of salt, right? We preserve things with salt. It's one way to do it. You can salt cure meat. It dries it. It dehydrates it. It makes it really tough and chewy, or tough and not chewy. And it'll keep. I mean, it'll keep for a really long time, to the extent that salt has been more valuable than gold at various points in history. Because food is kind of significant, and I know I don't really have to explain that to this congregation. We like our food. But that's just one way of preserving, and we usually think that preserving is keeping something in good shape until later. But that's not always how preserving works, is it? I know some of you can or have canned, right? What do you have to do if you're going to can something? You're sterilize. What happens if you don't sterilize, Marna? What? Botulism. Nurse. Right? So sometimes we preserve more than we had intended to preserve in the jar, right? It grows things. It's useful as a fourth grade science project. Not really for dinner, right? And that got me thinking about how we tie together this great end of the church, the preservation of the truth, is what are we trying to preserve? What truth is it that we're trying to preserve? Because if there's something not good in there and we preserve it, we're going to have a surprise when we open the jar later, aren't we? So the simple thing about what is truth, because this is not an intro to philosophy class, is to go to Jesus who says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." Right? I can proof text that one with the best of them. Do you hear the conversation he was having with the disciples before he gives them that line, before he smacks Thomas and Philip around a little bit? Is, this is where I'm going, and you're welcome, and you know how to get there. And they go, "We don't know how to get there. We don't know where you're going. We don't know what you're trying to do." So we're going to make Jesus the truth as he says, "I'm the way. Thomas, I'm the way. the truth, I'm the life. Thomas, come on, Thomas, step up here. What truth are we trying to preserve? I mean, this is a huge question for the church. What truth are we trying to preserve? Are we trying to preserve the way we've always done it? Which may or may not have anything to do with truth, right? The church has always, what? Done what? Done it that way. Do we have some specific examples? We have always let the children play with fire in worship. Right? We have always been at 1200 South Carbon? No. We have always had pastors who stayed more than a year at a time. I'm our 21st pastor in 110 years. So you can do the math on average stay and all that sort of fun stuff. But I'm at 7.5. So the math already doesn't hold up. Joe was here almost 12 years. Dan was here 11, 13. So we can do the math, right? And we can play with some of those numbers. We have always, what? Valued music? We have always eaten well. We have always had about 40 people in Sunday school. True or false? One point we had 300 people in Sunday school. We had more people in Sunday school than you had in church. The 1920s. The Ramblers group. We have always let kids take communion before confirmation. We have always let women be in official roles of church leadership. We have always had morally upright leaders in the church. That one was the fastest response of all. So what truth are we trying to preserve here? Jesus. Now, which Jesus are we talking about? Because all it takes is that little thing that didn't get cleaned off in what we preserve to taint the whole thing, doesn't it? It is not as simple as saying, which the American church has done for the last 200 years, about every 40 years, we get a group of people who go, the church is really messed up. We're going to go back to how they did it right after Jesus left, and that'll make it perfect. And about 40 years later, usually out of those churches, comes a group who says, the church is really messed up. Let's reset. Okay, so accepting the fact we're probably not going to get it right perfectly, what is it important? What truth is important for us to preserve? What is it about Jesus that needs to be able to be kept for the cold, long winter? For the next generation, for the generation after that, what is the heirloom of our faith that we need to be able to pass on through generations? Tell me about this Jesus that you want your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren and their grandchildren to know. He's going to save them? He's the Son of God. And he saves. What?
He came to love.
Compassionate. I'm a boy, so I want to know want them to know he's pretty good with a bullwhip. Right? That's a piece of the story. What else do you want to hand down about Jesus? Spoke truth to power.
He's the creator, the sustainer.
The redeemer, right? Creator, redeemer, sustainer. Prophet, priest, and king. When all else fails, love. Love always wins. God in human form. He died for us. He also lost his temper. Man, we are hard to work with, aren't we? Still lives for us today, right? Okay, so when we're telling this great story, the preservation of the truth, what are we telling? Are we telling that when we say God came to earth in human form, that's Marnus, and that is the Son of God, do we mean Jesus is a man? And because Jesus is a man, only men. It's a short leap, right? We follow Jesus, and Jesus is a man, and so clearly you got to follow me as a man. Yeah, thanks, Granger. Do you see how easy it is to get a grain in there? Jesus is God. That changes all the stuff, right? So when we say Jesus says love always wins and Jesus has a temper. Yeah, but I mean, how do we hold those two pieces together and not make it Dad loves me, but he has a temper and he hits me? We have to be careful about this preservation piece. Because there's a lot to it. The stuff we carry forward, the stuff we share from generation to generation. Every church tells different stories about God. We all have the same, like, selection. But we tell different stories. And so ultimately the question when we talk about the preservation of the truth as the great end of the church, one of the reasons we exist for one of the reasons for our being is that we have a challenge as to what we keep and what we throw out. Now, I know that some of you have moved more than others of you, right? When you move, what do you keep? Is it everything? Okay, Marta, let's not talk about how you move then, okay? What do you get rid of? Junk. Stuff you don't use, different things at different times. What you've outgrown. What you don't need. In our house, it's what we don't remember why we kept. Anybody have that case too? When we talk about preserving the truth, we're talking about what pieces of furniture theologically we want to keep in the sanctuary. Okay? We're big Presbyterians here, have been since 1907, and really since longer than that, but hey. So in our sanctuary, this is going to always be visible. And it is not an altar. It is a table. And that sets us apart. Because this is the table at which we gather at Christ's invitation to be fed. And there's always going to be one of these. And it's probably going to be small like this because we tend to sprinkle. And there's going to be water. Because in the life of our churches, there will always be baptisms. To make Laurel happy, there's going to be one of these. There's probably actually going to be more than one of these. And if you know our polity really well, you'll know that somebody like me is not the pastor alone. I'm a teaching elder. My job is to teach. And I'm a minister of word and sacrament. Those are the pieces we've kept that are really important to us, because word, sacrament. When I go home, people call me a preacher. That's not really what I am. What we do, even down to the language we speak in worship, is try to preserve the truth of what we believe about God revealed in Jesus Christ. So for a congregation like ours, in a denomination like ours, that means we have people who come to us from different places with different backgrounds and different experiences. 60% of Presbyterians came to us from another denominational history. We have been, over the last 100 years in America, the place of choice in a lot of parts of the country for Protestants who married Catholics. Because we're liturgical enough, and for Baptists who married Episcopalians, because we're liturgical enough, but not too much so. We are a place of middle ground. We are a place for people who have been told they are not welcome somewhere else. And we believe that's because Jesus is a place and a person for people who are not welcome elsewhere. At the very core of things, that is how we live out a gospel story we tell about a man, the Son of God, who healed and touched lepers, who ate with tax collectors and all sorts of other sinners and things like that. That's how we live this out, is we try to be that place where if you're doctrinally unsound over there, we probably have room for you over here. We may not, but we probably do. We have a name that is really hard to spell. So I got to meet with the new Methodist pastor at Aldersgate this past week to welcome him to town. And I gave him my email address, and he looked up and said, "You're going to have to help me because I don't know how to spell Presbyterian." Right? Got a tough name to pronounce. That means the elders rule the church. Because we believe that's an important truth, is that we are stronger as Christ's body with more of us working together than we are with one person in charge. Amen. Now, you'll find other churches that are Presbyterian. They're ruled by elders. You'll find other churches that are Reformed that come out of the same doctrinal, theological background, roughly, that we do. And they've taken turns in different directions. That's their truth that they're choosing to preserve. The truth that we have chosen collectively to preserve is different. If you hear our mission statement, the mission statement of this congregation, it talks about our call to show the mighty love of God through mission on four continents and in our community. Four continents. One, two, three, four. Okay, we're splitting you guys up. Lithuania's handled over here. Got two going there. Tom and Jocelyn are normally over there, right? I have no idea where Steph Tebow sat. I think about right there. Where do we get that from? Where do we get the sense that it's not just about us, this gospel thing? Well, Jesus did it a couple times, right? We've got Matthew 28, 19 and 20, where he says, "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit." We got that one. How about Jesus, his very existence? He came to people who were strangers, and all aspects of the word stranger apply, who were hard to deal with, who didn't necessarily want to hear it, who had no background, and proclaimed good news. That's a truth we intend to preserve, isn't it? Anyway, this one's a tricky one because it's all about family stories. Most of us preserve different family stories inside the family than we're willing to tell outside the family, right? Lori and I got married. We got the raft of gifts. We put them in the truck. We took them to our new apartment in Belmont, North Carolina. We started unpacking and writing thank you notes. You know, that's just like what you do, right? And we got these candlesticks. They were brown terracotta with cherubs and little gemstones on them. Hideous. And so we called Mom. We had already called Lori's mom, and we were pretty sure they didn't come on that side of the family because they were one of the ones that the card had gotten lost on. And we certainly didn't want to attribute this gift to anybody who had not sent it. And Mom started laughing when I started describing the item. And she says, "I see you've gotten a gift from Azzy and Rachel. They give the most hideous things." Did she tell us that beforehand? Some family stories have to be experienced. I believe the gospel is one of them. Because we need to take gleeful joy when we see somebody get it. Because it's not really ugly candlesticks. We have family stories we don't tell until it's okay to tell them. My grandmother had five siblings. One of them was my great uncle John. You've heard stories about Uncle John before. Uncle John is the one I sold my brother to at a family wedding when I was four and he was two for 35 cents and four pieces of hard candy. That's the kind of guy Uncle John was. He went away to World War II, as most people did, came back, settled on the family farm, bought his siblings out of the family farm because he said, you guys don't get to tell me what color I get to paint the bathroom. The minister at the church on the day of his funeral started off by saying, Uncle John was a sharecropper. If you had a crop, he'd share it. But he told another story about John that I did not know. John had always been bald, as far as I knew. I came into the story late, so, you know. When John had finished his term in World War II, he was given the option of coming home or staying in Europe. He'd been in the European theater. And he stayed for a year to resettle displaced persons. And the delousing chemicals and everything else made all of his hair fall out. I just thought he was old and bald. Right? Old people, they lose their hair. It's just what happens. I think that's a family story we should be telling more often than we did. So when we talk about preserving stories, which ones are for us and which ones are for everyone? Because they're all true. But what is it? What truth are we preserving about Jesus Christ that we need to share? And that we need to hope comes out of the can wonderfully. To God alone be the glory this day and forevermore. Amen.